Here he is. He's not John Osher. He's John Osher.
Osher.
Right? You know,
Smooth and easy.
2 months in, I'm going to start pronouncing it properly.
All right. Who told you that? Was that Lauren?
I don't know. Little bird.
All right.
Whispered in my ear. Said, get it right.
All right.
He's the senior writer
been
for
wrong
sakes,
a lot,
Jaguars.com. And he spent the last week doing what exactly?
I was taking my son around North Carolina, sort of looking at some colleges.
The college trip.
I don't know. We don't know where he'll go yet. But
rising senior?
Rising senior, yeah. So it's a fun trip, but obviously, you know, a little emotional to think about that milestone coming up next year.
You were saying you got married when you were 25 years old, and your son is just
25.
A stone's throw from that age now.
Well, it goes quick. I mean, it's, yeah, he is. And I was, you know, I don't want that coming much sooner than that, Mike.
I hear you. And the reason that got brought up, we're just talking, I want to wish happy birthday to my son, Colin, 10 years ago today. It's a great day. It really is a great day.
Were you working that day? Take that one off.
I did not
work that day. Good.
I took my kid to Legoland, okay? We left the St. Augustine at 7 in the morning, got back after 8 o'clock at night. I think that was a fine full day of
activity.
Yeah,
there's nothing relaxing about that either.
He is not much. Yeah. Actually, his mom is the trip driver.
Okay.
You know, so dad occasionally was known to bring a pillow
sure.
in the car. It's actually not as bad, not as stressful when you're not awake.
Yeah, but those days at the park.
Oh, brother. I mean, 97 degrees and every one of them I was feeling yesterday. Yeah. So
if your kids don't know you love them, just wait till they have to take their kids to a park.
They'll find out, right? The right. problem is I'll be long dead and gone by the time that it will dawn on him.
All right, Jack.
So, hey, look, as I told you, I got 10 years in to the plan. Eventually, I need somebody to take care of me.
Yep.
Somewhere down the line. I'm not going to get into the gory details like I might have been sharing with you what I expect him to have to be going through somewhere down the line. But I'm putting in my work mm-hmm. now. That's really what it's all about, right?
You gotta
circle of
in
life.
The future, Mike. You got to invest in the future.
And by the way, if I were home right now, you know, he'd be ignoring me as he plays the Lego Movie video game.
Get used to the ignoring part.
Yeah, which
that's pretty much par
it's
for the
grown
course.
More frequent. I got to admit, over the last say 2 years, as opposed to the first 8. But
there comes a part in about 4 years where it goes from ignoring to just constant derision.
Out and out derision, scorn, whatever you want to consider it. But happy birthday to my favorite guy in the whole world, Colin Dempsey. 10 years young today. He actually is young today. And the rest of us are just falling apart day by day.
Aging fast.
But the trip good overall? You find any, you get any, you know, good ins with any of the colleges up there?
Yeah, he's a tennis player and might play somewhere. So we just kind of looked at some, you know, smaller Division II schools. And,
are you a tennis player yourself?
I am not.
I was going to say, where did he get his athleticism from, Mom?
I'm not sure where he got it.
I've seen you out there stalking the sidelines, chomping at the bit to get onto the practice field.
Yeah, he's strikingly athletic for being my son.
Interesting. All right, well, that's good.
Because I was not blessed with
my kid's strikingly everything, considering he's my son. Yeah. Anything that's good, it's a bit of a surprise to me.
So it's it's one of those trips, as any parent at that age knows. It's fun to see the future, and it's it's a little scary to know the future's right there. But that's
no doubt. We're just so old. Here we are, final day of the first half of 2014. Also, happy birthday to Mike Tyson. I only know that because. One of those deals, like, you look it up. Don't you look it up? Like, who does your kid share a birthday with? Does your kid share a birthday with anyone famous?
He almost shared with me. I was the 21st, and he was the 22nd of July, so it was very close to that. But
make a note, Lauren.
Haven't looked at that. Yeah, that's a hint, Lauren.
22nd. Lauren's July 25th.
Exactly. That's
right.
So easy to remember now.
See? It is, because it's the day before the Carrie Underwood concert.
Exactly.
She has me trained. That's
actually,
how
it's
I remember
the other way. The Carrie Underwood concert is
a day after Lauren's birthday. Right. Yeah, it's a belated birthday present.
They're bringing her for me.
To Lauren, for that matter. Marquise Lee not signed yet with the Jags. No big deal as far as the senior writer's concerned. I know we got plenty of time.
Unless it goes into camp, which there's no indication that it will. I get that fans sort of want to have angst over that sort of an issue, but unless it goes into camp, he doesn't miss anything. There's no preparation being lost, so I would say it's not a big deal.
All right. Well,
I'd be shocked if he's not in camp signed. And
I would too at this point. You just wonder, you know, why it's gone this long. You saw Justin Gilbert. You may have seen his comments over the weekend. He said he's not sure his contract will be done by training camp. It's like, what era are you? Is your agent living in right
yeah,
now?
Yeah, especially with the second round pick. Again, being gone for a week, I'm not exactly sure the detail, but you would think it's timing of certain payments. There's not going to be
minor detail.
Yeah, there's not going to be much that's going to change in terms of the amount of money on a situation like this, but there may be bonuses, trigger clauses, stuff like that might be an issue for one side or the other. But again, there's just not. It's not a case where there are a team of people sitting around the Jaguars right now going, oh my goodness, what are we going to... It's more just sort of waiting for it to play out.
Well, we here, Lauren and I were talking about it this morning. We're very proud to give you a platform for your opinions here. As 1010XL, of course, is the platform for Jaguars today.
All right.
We were worried about your ozone column streak. A little bit.
Oh, on Saturday?
Yeah.
Oh, really?
It didn't post till late in the day.
Yeah, it was sort of a whole thing. I guess we're on the NFL platform.
There you go.
Ding, ding, ding.
There he goes. He's got it now, Lauren.
It only took like 2 minutes.
Well, I got it, but I wasn't sure that...
That I got it?
Lauren was spending the weekends worried about the ozone.
She was, actually. She's texting me over the weekend, when the hell is this column going to drop?
Isn't it like 1,056 days now?
In that range. I'm not sure that
you... All right,
come on now.
The streak began why?
Well, the streak began August 8th, I believe, 2011. And it was sort of a deal where it was the preseason and... It used to run, when I first got here, we did it Monday through Friday.
Okay.
And during training camp, I wrote a couple of Saturday ozones, not really thinking anything of it, and people sort of made a big deal that, oh, you're doing it on Saturday now. And that was sort of back when the blackout thing was always an issue, were the games going to get blacked out or not. So I just sort of made what I thought at the time was an offhanded remark about, you know what, I'll do an ozone every day. I was convinced enough that they were not going to black out. That I said, I'll do an ozone every day until they black out, and I'm just going to bank on just going for a long, long time. And after a while, it just became something where it's nice to have something on the site on the weekends for the fans who are really hardcore into it, which is a lot of the ozone readers are readers who want something every day. So this time of year, it's not all football-centric. There's a lot of sort of rambling threads where you follow what the readers are asking, and it turns kind of goofy.
Very unlike Jaguars Tay will be over the next 3 weeks.
Yeah,
it's
sort of a dead period, so you sort of just kind of go with the flow, and I figure out what to talk about. But I always tell people I'm answering football questions. It's fun. People have fun with it, so it's not a terrible burden to do.
How many emails is it? Email primarily that people send questions.
Yeah,
there's through the site, kind of like.
Yeah, there is a box that people enter their email, and then they enter their question, and when they enter the box, it comes into my inbox.
How many do you get a week?
During the season, probably, I never actually count it. It's probably close to 100 a day during the season.
Okay, so you got plenty to choose from then.
Yeah, during the off season, it's less. Like anything, I'm sure we have. Fewer listeners this time of year than we would the day after.
Not a chance.
Not today. No. Ozone's on today.
On a normal off-season day.
I don't know how we're in Monday.
But it varies. This time of year, it's probably, a third or half of a normal. But there's never much of an issue in finding questions and finding something to talk about and a direction for it to go. And it's really, again, I always stress that I'm always struck by the daily reader interest and the daily, I don't say passion, but there is an interest every day. And if there wasn't, we probably wouldn't do it on the weekends. So it certainly stands up in terms of the interest and the momentum that keeps it going.
Because it's hilarious.
I'm blessed by it.
All right. Well, we've got, like you get a lot of questions, we've got a question for folks every day. And today, this kind of ties in with Peter King's Monday Morning Quarterback column. He wrote about the Canadian Football League today, which one of the things they adopted for this season is a rule change that will allow coaches to review or request reviews of pass interference penalties or non-pass interference penalties in case they feel like they should have been. So today, this is straight out of the Sports Radio Summer Fair handbook right here. We ask you, according to the Tom Bush Family of Dealerships Fan Feedback Spotlight, which NFL rule change would you like to see enacted? So we'll talk about that a little bit today. Blake Bortles at the Rookie Symposium along with the rest of the Jaguar rookie class. Get into that. John Osher is here. I'm sure we'll get a World Cup update coming up from Tony as the United States back on the pitch tomorrow in the Amazon as they take on somebody or other. Oh, yes, Belgium.
Belgium
tomorrow. I got it.
We take down waffles and chocolate tomorrow.
Was it an upset or not an upset that the Netherlands beat Mexico the way Mexico was playing?
It was an upset with the way that game was being played, for sure. I mean, look, there should have been a PK given in the first half. He can say he flopped if you want. He got hit on the front and backside of his leg. I thought that was a penalty. He just happened to get it really late in the game, and that's what turned it for the Netherlands.
I need a little bit more description because that's the first I've heard about any of that stuff. So I'm trying to visualize what happened right now. We'll get into it coming up.
Robin got taken down in the box three times.
Robin did?
Yes.
How dare they? Hands off Robin.
Three times he went down in the box. Two of them looked like they could have been flops. One of them had, at least one of them, was a legit penalty. Mexico has nothing to complain about.
All right, we'll get into that a little bit along with all the football stuff. The American football stuff today. If you'd like to get on board, 641-1010. As always, tweet the program at MD_1010XL, at John Osher, at 1010XL Fat Tony, at 1010XL Lauren. Again, your fan feedback spotlight question of the day. Which NFL rule change would you like to see enacted this year? It's a Wild West Guns and Gold Monday. Mike Dempsey, John Osher, Fat Tony here with you live at Everbank Field. It's Jaguars today on 1010XL 92.5 FM. Yeah, I had that one. Kind of thought that. The other one I thought she might have gone with Tony was Everything is Awesome from the Lego Movie.
Yeah.
Because that one doesn't stick in your head.
Not at all.
I don't know anything about the Lego Movie.
Holy cow. Consider yourself fortunate, Lauren, that you know nothing about the Lego Movie.
Sweet. Good. Fun.
It was good. You have a 10-year-old who sings that song nonstop.
Sure.
At every opportunity. I guess I'd rather have him say that than everything is rotten. But, you know, it does tend to repeat a little bit after a while. It was a good movie, though. Lego Movie. Have you seen it?
I've not.
You'd enjoy it.
Yeah, Jake's 17, so
it's all right.
You know.
I was a Tinker Toy guy myself.
I had
one Lego set when I was a kid. It was a small little thing, and you know, with like I don't know, 100 pieces. Yeah,
see,
like
Legos
that.
Changed. We were a kid with bricks, and now there's like action figures.
Yeah,
and,
right. I mean, everything was bricks. Build
dynamic.
Your own thing.
Right.
Right. You could build.
I loved
this
Legos,
house.
But there were no men involved and no little. You
there
know.
Were no minifigs, as they're called now.
Is it a minifig? It's a minifig. Well. I've bought enough of them, I should know that, Mike.
Definitely a minifig. All right. There was no Millennium Falcon Lego set, put it that way. I don't know. Maybe there was something, the equivalent, but...
No, there wasn't.
I don't know
and
what
actually,
that was.
So that,
no, there wasn't. There was not, because I wanted that.
No, they say that might have been what saved Legos, honestly.
It probably was.
Is when they got that affiliation with Star Wars and started putting that kind of stuff out. It rebuilt the company, basically.
Are you kidding me? Yeah. I mean, Legos, Star Wars, Ninjago, all that. Garbage. They pump out TV series just to come up with a new line of toys. I mean, some of those TV series are absolutely hideous on Cartoon Network. But what are you going to do? Star Wars has the staying power. I don't know. We'll see about episode 7, 8, and 9 coming up. All right, we got John Osher here with us. I feel like I'm really paying attention to how I'm saying your last name now.
Osher.
I know.
You know, it's
so easy to say Osher.
It's technically Osher with a ZH, but I'm over 45, 47. It's been pronounced wrong, spelled wrong so many times, I'm not going to hold it.
You've been beaten down, in other words.
I am most people near me can tell you I'm a beaten down man.
All right. seems reasonable to me. It's Manzi's birthday today as well, Lauren?
It is. Happy birthday, Scott Manzi.
You can't share my kid's birthday. You're going to have to find a new one. There, Manzi. Happy birthday to you as well. 641-1010 if you want to get in today. Talk a little Jags with us. We will talk about some rule changes, proposals. We've already got a bunch of them coming via Twitter and Facebook. What you'd like to see changed about the National Football League, if anything at all. Last week we spent some time taking a look, particularly early in the week with Ryan O'Halloran in. Now that OTA's minicamp is done, looking at some of the roster battles setting up for training camp, where...
Did Ace Sanders come up in that conversation?
Ace Sanders did. It's so funny, because how did he put it in his column, talking about Ace Sanders? Even though he admitted, he said something to the effect of, Tony, someone in a position to have some influence on this decision told me I was crazy,
right.
Or something of the like. He said this in his receiver... capsule in the Times Union. He had Cecil Shorts, Allen Robinson, Marquise Lee, Mike Brown, Allen Hurns, and Ace Sanders, and that's the order he listed them in. He said, I thought Sanders would start training camp on the bubble, but because Doss couldn't stay healthy this month, the current edge goes to Ace. So it's still a grudging inclusion of Ace Sanders.
Beat guys have a tough time giving it up when they have that.
They latch on to something, and they just won't let go.
I understood where Ryan was coming from on that, and I've sort of said with Ace all along, I think he has to improve certain things that they drafted him for to be a beyond four-year guy.
You mean his punt return average, for instance?
That and having a little more separation when he's running inside routes. I mean, but I don't think that's unusual for a rookie to need to improve those things, especially a rookie fourth-round pick. I would have been surprised had he come in last year and just been off the charts at both of those things. He's a fourth-round pick, and for a fourth-round pick, he was very productive, and now he has to continue to progress off of his rookie year. So I understood where Ryan was coming from on the theory. It's just hard to see Ace Sanders not on this roster next year.
You look at what he did at South Carolina, and granted, things guys do in college don't always translate to National Football League, but doing it in the SEC, I think his last year in school didn't drop a single pass. Among catchable passes thrown his way was a dynamic punt returner at times. You see the potential there. They don't have many game breakers at all on offense, at least guys that have proven themselves to be game breakers. So he's got the opportunity. They need he and Denard Robinson to, between the two of them, take some kind of step forward to give you that threat that maybe once every couple of games we're going to get a big play out of one of these guys.
And it's been a long time since you have felt that sort of consistent threat from the special teams. They had a very good year on special teams last year, but never had that guy who you kind of thought with each time had a chance to break it. So a lot of times with punt returns, it's as much getting the exact details of the blocking in front of you perfected. Punt returns can be very dependent on the four guys who are setting up the blocks in front. So I think overall the Jaguars would like to get their punt return to where there is one or two opportunities a game for space, and Ace Sanders needs to take advantage of the space when it's there a little bit.
Right. When that's there, you've got to make a few guys miss, and that's where...
blocking is a much bigger factor even for the really good punt returners. I remember in the mid-90s, Green Bay was exceptional at it. And I think Travis Jervey was involved. I just remember watching them and being so well coached, so disciplined, because they had some veterans on special teams. This is still, when your roster is in transition, as it has been, it can take time in every area to get the continuity and the togetherness on the field down. You would think they would get better as the roster gets more stabilized in an area like punt return blocking.
Now, Johnny O is a veteran NFL writer if he's going inside the business with Travis Jervey's contributions to the punt block.
It just stuck in my mind. I mean,
the blocking on returns.
They were so good at it for a while that you just sort of noticed it, and he was involved with it. But point being, the returners always get a lot of credit, and a lot of times it's the blocking in front of those guys, and you usually need a little bit of experience in that. It's hard to get experience on special teams because it turns over so quickly, because it's usually non-starters at the bottom of the roster. So it's always a trick.
You're talking about a unit working together, having that kind of experience, right?
Experienced players, first of all, and then experience working together. Experience when the ball is coming down, knowing instinctively, this guy's going to be over here, this guy's going to be over here, I'm going to make this block. It's just a tougher thing than is given credit for often, because you've usually got a lot of turnover in those spots.
Now, as much as we've enjoyed the gift that Ryan O'Halloran has given us with the discussion about Ace Sanders, the other, you know, continuing down towards the end of the roster at the wide receiver position, you mentioned Allen Hurns as a guy that I think has, you know, made the most of his opportunities. He's one of these classic guys that you feel like, does he do any one thing great?
Right.
Maybe not, but he seems to do everything competently or better.
He was very, very consistent during OTAs, the part we could see.
The part we're allowed to talk about.
Right.
Anyway.
And so you would think that he's the leader among the rookies to carve out a spot at 5 or 6. The question remains, still hasn't had pads on, does he do anything strikingly well enough to earn a spot on the roster, or is he a potential practice squad guy? Which I kind of think he could wind up on the practice squad because I don't know that somebody would automatically pick him up if he's not on the active roster. But I certainly think that he will be involved somehow.
Well, we talk about special teams. Tanner Doss, that's where you expect him to make an impact if he makes this roster as well. Along with Josh Evans, maybe the guy, the guys that have been hurt the most by being sidelined throughout OTAs.
Yeah, and sometimes that storyline about being sidelined in OTAs is one that can disappear very quickly in training camp. All of a sudden, you're 3 days into camp with the pads on, and the guy has been healthy. He's been out there every practice. And the fact that they weren't in OTAs, especially for a veteran guy like Evans or Doss, is you don't even think about it. You're not writing it. We're not talking about it anymore. For the rookies who missed, I think it remains a little bit more of an issue because they're talking about now they're learning things they could have learned in OTAs. If Doss is on the field the first week of training camp and doing what they thought he would do coming in, then we're probably not worried about the fact that he missed OTAs. If he continues to be a guy who's sidelined, if he's a one-day-in, one-day-out guy, then the whole thing becomes an ongoing issue. So I think the book hasn't opened on Doss because he hasn't been on the field yet, but I don't think you would call him behind just because he hasn't been on the field yet.
The thing with Josh Evans is it's not necessarily that he is behind in what he knows or how to run the ski. It's that it seems, from what you can tell in non-contact practices, that Winston Guy has been catching people's eye.
Yeah, I mean, Winston Guy is big. He's athletic. He's fast. The issue at times last year was he always in the right spot? He's a very aggressive kid. He's all over the place, and he can put himself in position to make plays. You got the impression last year at times he put himself in position not to make plays a little too much. So you got to harness that. You got to get in the right spot. But a Winston Guy, physically, athletically, is a guy that you hope can be on the field and in the right place to make those plays.
All right, 6-4-1-10-10. Got some calls on the line. Charles has a question for you, John. Charles, welcome to Jaguars Today on a Wild West Guns and Gold Monday. How are you?
Oh, great, great. Appreciate the opportunity to speak. John, Demetrius McCray, number 35, he was the last pick last year. And, you know, he didn't get a whole bunch of opportunities to play last year. And I'm just hoping to get a positive report from you or any information on him. I just want to see the kid succeed. How about that?
Well, I know they liked him a lot last year. They felt like when he played, I believe it was Seattle, that he started. I may have that wrong, but he started and played a whole game early last year and then didn't get that opportunity again. They like him a lot, and they talked about him in the offseason a lot as a guy who they feel like is going to be a part of the secondary going forward. Now, is he going to be a starter, or is Colvin going to come along at that spot opposite Grotz, and eventually those are going to be the two guys? But they like everything that Demetrius McCray brings. It's really going to be a matter of sort of how he develops and where he fits. I'd be surprised if he's not in the mix on the roster for at least the next 2 years.
He's been a guy that, again, give credit to Ryan and Mark Long. They've talked a lot about talking to the coaching staff that he's been singled out as a guy to keep an eye on.
Right, exactly.
So, you know, it's easy, I think, for fans to forget about guys that don't make an impact in the rookie season, but the coaching staff certainly hasn't.
Every coach you talk to talks about how he did everything right last year, and he was probably a lot better at the end of last year than he was when he played. They didn't have a whole lot of injuries at that position, so he didn't get a whole lot of opportunities. and when I say injuries, Gratz was hurt, but Blackman stepped in on the other side. So McRae didn't get that chance to step in and have a 3 or 4 game run where he was starting. But from whatever you can tell during practice, they liked him a lot. You know, it's hard to say exactly what his role is because you haven't seen him in pads coming off that second off season, which is really where a guy like that can change the perception.
Yeah, pretty tall guy at 6 feet tall, 185, not huge, but certainly in line with a guy like Aaron Colvin, who's 6 feet tall, mm-hmm. 186. I mean, they're identical in terms of that.
Yeah, and again, it's one of those things, you have never heard them say anything bad about the kid. You've never heard them say, you know, there's been no hint that it's not working out. Now it's a matter of getting into that second camp when the competition really starts and seeing where he lands.
All right, 641-1010. We'll take a quick break. Get back to more of your calls coming up in a moment. It's Wild West Guns and Golden Monday. John Osier, the senior writer from Jaguars.com, along with us. I'm Mike Dempsey with Fat Tony. We're live at EverBank. It's Jaguars today on 1010XL, 92.5 FM. All right, here we go. Wild West Guns and Gold Monday. North Florida's largest dealer of firearms and accessories. Talking about revolvers, semi-autos, rifles, shotguns, you name it. If it fires, Wild West Guns and Gold can help you get your hands on it. Wild West Guns and Gold will meet or beat any gun shop's price in the United States of America, and that is a guarantee. You can even trade your gold for guns with Wild West Guns and Gold. GunsForJax.com, the website. Guns, the number 4, JAX.com. They're located on Lane Avenue here in Jacksonville. You can call 693-0777 to find out everything you need to know about Wild West Guns and Gold, our Monday sponsor.
I want to have one of those dandy subs you keep talking about.
They're delicious. Did you miss the last time they brought it? As a matter of fact, one of the members of the Thompson family is a Bold City Brigader.
Yeah, right.
And,
right.
Oh, yeah. And we're very popular with him on the Twitter. And he's just last week tweeted at me, said, hey, got a whole, you know, want to bring you guys a bunch of food. Let me know when.
When you had him in here before, I did sneak a dandy sub, and it was...
That's what I'm saying.
Dandy.
They're delicious. They're dandy. They it's exactly the name. The name implies everything that they are. They're just dandy. But I will try to keep you in mind the next time the delivery is made. Bold City Batman.
I would appreciate that.
We'll be on the job dropping sandwiches off for the whole crew sooner rather than later. 641-1010. Let's get back to the phone lines. DJ, you're next up today on Jaguars Today. How are you?
What's going on, Mike? What's going on, John? John, I got a question for you. With the offensive woes of the past seasons or whatever, what is going to be the identity of this team? I know it's probably going to be trial by fire to find out if we're going to be a more balanced, if we're going to be pass heavy, run heavy. But with going into this season, ideally, where do you see the offensive, line as far as like we're going to be this type of offensive team versus, you know, are we going to just be up in the air? You never know. It's going to be week to week with the offense.
That's a good question. I think they would like to have Gerhardt's style sort of define things a little bit, meaning, you know, he's not a breakaway back. I think they would like to be able to run effectively a little more. I don't want to say it's going to be a 3 yards in a cloud of dust type thing. I don't think that's what they're looking for. But they would like to be able to get him the ball on early downs and get something a little more established where they're a little more consistent. And he's a power guy, so you might look at this team next year and see a little more physical. They would certainly like the offensive line at some point early. I think it's going to be tough early for the offensive line to be a great run-blocking line because that simply takes a little bit of time to come together. But over the course of the early part of the season, I think they would like to see more games where the running game is up in the mid-90s, perhaps 100 yards. I guess where they're able to set the tone offensively and dictate a little more offensively with a little more consistency than they did last year. So maybe a little more power running than maybe people would expect under Jed Fish.
Tony, what did Jed Fish tell us? 57%? Is that his target percentage to run the football this year? I want to say that was the case.
Yeah, I think it was. And when we go back to last season and we look at some of the big plays that this team had at different points, look, it was when the running game was going. When it was working for them, whether it was Mojo for limited ports in the season or Todman or whatever, when it worked, That's when they brought out the play action. That's when they brought out these trick plays where they would get big chunk plays. And last year, unfortunately, that's how they had to get those kind of plays, because they didn't have the skill on the outside to just go straight ahead and say, hey, we're going to run a 20-yard in and we can hit that guy on that route. They couldn't do that. So every time they had a little bit of momentum, they used it to their advantage. They obviously should be more skilled than they were last year, bringing in Marquise Lee and Allen Robinson, but they took advantage of the opportunities they had last year. You certainly think they want to again this season.
By the way, the Jags, let's see, last year, why can't I find them on these this league leaders page? I don't see them. It's got to be right in front of me. Who led the league in rushing as a team last year? Do you know? Per game, team leader in NFL leader in
rushing.
I'm
going to throw out San Francisco, but I think that's wrong.
It is, Tony, guess? I know why I couldn't find it. They only listed the top 30 rushing offenses on the first page. I had to scroll down to the next page.
Seattle?
To find Jacksonville at 31. Ouch. Philadelphia. You think of Philadelphia?
Yeah.
You think of Chip Kelly with just having a wide-open offense. They're going to throw. Obviously, they had LeSean McCoy there, but they averaged 160 yards a game on the ground. And nobody's calling that offense boring.
No.
Now, it's, you know, LeSean McCoy is a dynamic type runner. I think Toby Gerhardt, John, you want to pound the rock simply because I think he's going to, you hope he's going to be more effective when he hits about carry number 15 mm-hmm. because he is that big physical guy that, you know, when the seventh time that safety is coming to fill the hole, you just want him going, really, again? And it's that where you think you're going to start to have an edge with Toby Gerhardt late in games.
Well, and he also seems, and this is just from, you know, watching a little bit of what's available out there on Toby Gerhardt, he seems to have a knack at the end of carries for not just running over a guy, but for sort of making a move right at the end and getting a few extra yards. He just seems to have some balance and some vision that is maybe what separates him from the other guy. So, again, I don't want to say that they're going to be a pounded offense where you just think of them as just pure run, pure physical. But as Tony just said, they want to get it more established so that they can use these play actions so they can use the threat of the run to set up the pass, which they couldn't do a whole lot last year.
Do you think we're in an era, obviously, of the more wide-open passing, the yardage totals, the scoring coming from the passing game greater than it's ever been before, but yet we see a team like Seattle, which is mm-hmm. primarily run first on offense, although they have the good young quarterback and play defense. The year before, it was Baltimore. Mm-hmm. Again, similar, not a wide-open team. I mean, is that a trend, or it just happens that, I mean, look, Baltimore could have gone out in the first round of the playoffs
right.
just as easily to that Denver Bronco high-powered mm-hmm. team. They didn't. They won the game. Do we make too much out of the year-to-year, you know, trying to find what the trend is in the National Football League, or is there one right now as to what best suits you to win the championship?
Without question, we always make too much of it because we always look at the team that won the Super Bowl. We're always trying to find some trend, and everybody's out there trying to find it. With the running game, there are always going to be teams that can do it well. I think it's easier to develop a passing game if you have a quarterback because you can cover up offensive line issues if the quarterback has a quick release. So I think it takes more overall talent. It takes more overall players to do what San Francisco and Seattle are doing, which is to emphasize the run and to sort of make it a run-based offense as opposed to Denver, which can make it a pass-based offense because Peyton gets rid of the ball so well. He can negate issues on the offensive line because of his release and because of knowledge of the offense, which I'm not sure every quarterback can do.
And by the way, San Fran and Seattle were third and fourth in the league, respectively,
right.
in terms of running on a per-game basis. It's not perfect, but for the most part, if you are among the top 10 running teams, you're a pretty good team. Philadelphia mm-hmm. at number one. Buffalo at number two, kind of right. a little bit surprising. San Fran, Seattle, Washington, When you've got a quarterback who's running right. for some yardage, that factors in. The Jets, obviously, not a great team. Green Bay, however, in the top 10. Minnesota with Adrian Peterson. New England was a top 10 team, and Kansas City
right.
as well. So
that
more than half of those were playoff
contenders. That can be a self-fulfilling prophecy, of course, too, because if you're a team that's ahead late, you're going to run the fourth quarter a lot more. If you're always ahead, you're going to have more running opportunities than you are if you're always behind. The Jaguars, for instance, last year were behind a lot, not throwing at all in the second half. They weren't a great running team anyway. Certainly hurt their numbers going down. When I was with Indy, the Colts' philosophy was always with a great quarterback like a Peyton or a Brady or an Aaron Rodgers, there's really no gain to being the top running team in the NFL. They didn't have a goal of running for 140, 150 yards. If they were 105, 115, they had set up enough of a threat of the run to open things up for the quarterback. They really didn't have much desire to go 150 yards, because then all of a sudden, if you do that every game, you're taking the ball out of the best player's hands.
Right.
So they wanted to be able to run enough to set up the threat of it, to open everything else up, but they weren't really focused on getting 120, 130 yards a game. Obviously, we're talking about a different animal with this offense compared to that offense, but I'm sure Jed would tell you, let's get good enough at the run where everything else opens up, and we have the threat of the run to help everything else in the offense.
Yeah, please put that extra man in the box. You want to be at that right. point where you have the ability to take advantage of the
right.
extra man in the
now,
box.
Again, I'm not comparing that offense to this offense.
Right, because Peyton, I can't imagine, no matter how good Edgerrin James ever was, that they ever put the extra man in the box as long as Peyton Manning was under center.
It was rare.
Right. I guess I can't imagine. Might have been a little strong, but regardless. All right, today we're talking about NFL rules changes as well. And Tom's got a call on that at 641-1010. Tom, you're on Jaguars Today. Go ahead, please.
Yes, an exciting change. The last 2 minutes of the ball game, no field goals can be kicked.
No field goals in the last 2 minutes of the ball game.
Exactly.
It would probably radically alter the way NFL games are coached and played. And I think it would have 0% chance of ever happening, other than in some kind
it's
of
a good
experimental
talk radio
league.
Topic, though. Bro.
It is. It's a hell of a talk radio topic, Tom. But, I mean, you're not going to – the NFL doesn't need to go down the road where things – I mean, they're so popular right now. And really, they're fighting their own popularity. The at-home popularity of watching mm-hmm. it on TV is the only thing that rivals it. You know, going to a game and experiencing it yourself. So it's not like the game itself is wanting. I don't think there's a great clamoring to change it that radically.
There's already some pushback or some, I would say resentment, but some concern within the teams of sort of all the changes every year, which haven't even really been that much, but when you're talking about some of the defenseless receiver penalties and some things like that, the game has changed on the field in the last 4 or 5 years fairly dramatically, with some fairly dramatic rules each year. I think football people in general aren't big on change. They sort of resist that. So I know a rule like this, where you are completely changing the fabric of a certain time of the game, would be very hard to get through.
But they have floated the trial balloons on changes with field goals with extra points, mm-hmm. certainly. Some kickers have brought up longer field goals being worth more, which at times seems kind of counterintuitive. Like, you'd almost want to stall your offense at a certain point to get that extra point in. But so they have at least, and I think that's where those stories come from. It's the NFL throwing out a trial balloon and seeing what the reaction is from people like us. We put it out there and we eat it up like Pavlov's dog.
Yeah, and I think the extra point thing is very interesting, because it would be a major departure in the points of the game. Meaning, and it sounds kind of basic, but it's how you're keeping score, which would be dramatically different on some level than how they kept score 15 years ago. So you would start seeing a very different game in terms of how it played out, and that's starting to sort of mess with the very fabric of the game. So as logical as that rule change might seem, which is to bring more excitement to the extra point, I think they'll tread carefully in that area because it's more of a, you know, changing the fabric of the game issue than maybe some of the other ones that have changed.
We'll talk a little bit more about that as we go along today. The Tom Bush Family Dealerships Fan Feedback Spotlight today asks you simply, which rule change would you like to see enacted in the National Football League to make it a more enjoyable game for you? You can tweet us, post on Facebook.com/Jaguars Today as well with your suggestions for a chance to win a Jaguars Today T-shirt. All right, this Dayton football history brought to you this week by the Best Fence Company of Jacksonville. And I kid you not, stuff happened on this Dayton football history, John. As you well know, the NFL's Portsmouth Spartans became the Detroit Lions on this Dayton football history back in 1934.
The Spartans became the Lions, right.
The Spartans became the Lions, not the other way around, okay? And the Michigan State Lions became the Spartans, coincidentally enough. I don't know if that's true or not. Probably not. Also, that was in 1934. 1965, the NFL granted which city a franchise? 1965.
Atlanta.
That is correct, sir. I put you on the spot there. You got it right. Imagine this. As a Jaguar fan, right, first... What, 4 years, 95, 96, and first 5 years, two trips to the AFC Championship game. The Atlanta Falcons had their first season in 1966. How many games did they win in the 1960s? That's four full seasons.
My guess would be 13.
12.
Yeah.
Okay, you went high.
Right.
They won. So they averaged 3 wins a year for their first 4 years.
Tommy Nobis.
Tommy Nobis and company, Norb Hecker. Was their head coach, and they lost their first 9 regular season games and finished the 60s with only 12 wins.
And weren't that much better in the 70s until the grit split.
Finally got to the playoffs in 1978, so 12 years in. So imagine if the Jags in 2007, as David Garrard was helping them get to the playoffs, that was their first playoff appearance in franchise history. That's what the Atlanta Falcons franchise has been like.
They sported those red helmets, too, remember?
Oh, they really, you look back, that's not a good look. The White Sox, were the White Sox wearing throwbacks this weekend? Or have they just changed their uniform? Because I don't watch enough White Sox baseball these days.
I don't think they've changed the uniform, but were they wearing
some, like,
throwbacks?
It seemed like some nice, you know, like late 70s White Sox garb that I saw on there. They didn't have the shorts on, which is probably a wise choice. But other than that, it looked like quite the throwback. Also, this date in football history... The longest professional football game was played on this date in 1984. The L.A. Express knocking off the Michigan Panthers in the USFL playoffs, 27-21. Game lasted 93 minutes, 33 seconds, so it went to a third overtime. Two scoreless overtimes.
I believe Anthony Carter was probably the wide receiver.
I'm sure he was. Michigan Panthers. Anthony Carter was the big star.
Yeah, Steve Young.
Was he on the squad?
He
may have been in 84. He got that contract.
He came out in 83 and played in 84.
What did he get? Like a 40? Was it a 40-year, $40 million contract?
I think it was 10 years, $40
million.
Was
it 10 years, $40 million? It was one of those deals where I thought it paid him for years after he was out of the league.
Kind of like that Magic Johnson deal when he got the 25-year, $25 million contract from the Lakers.
Am I wrong, or is Bobby Bonilla still making money from the Mets? Didn't Bobby Bonilla sign one of those deals where he got... like deferred payments for like a quarter century.
And personal services, yeah.
It was like part of his contract, but instead of paying him X this year, we're going to pay you this and spread it out. And, you know, which is good for the team because they get to hold on to the money and use it for whatever. But
yeah, it's actually tomorrow is the date that he gets paid, July 1st. I just Googled it.
He gets paid
it.
Every July 1st?
July 1st through 2035, he gets $1.2 million.
That's awesome. That's not bad whatsoever. If you go, by the way, to throwbackmax.com, you can order up your USFL gear from back in the day, including your Jacksonville Bulls 1984, circa 1984 garb with all the other USFL boys out there. So throwbackmax.com has all those for you. Man, the Atlanta Falcons have had a tortured existence for the most part. So there's Dave Caldwell walking down the hallway right here. He's grinding away with a golf shirt and ball cap on.
Yep.
That's pretty much his standard fare, though. I mean, it is It's kind of a ghost town around these parts, is it not, right now?
Yeah, it's if there's a time of year the NFL turns into a ghost town, it's probably the next 2 weeks.
Yeah.
Where it's really become, again, since the mid-90s, when I first got into it, there was a longer off-season, longer ghost town period. Now it's really to the point where there's maybe about 3 weeks where it's sort of dark around here. Beyond that,
are they going to try to correct that, or do you at least at some point need to, just for the sake of the people that are employed by your league, have some kind of downtime? It's not like the NFL's far from anyone's mind at
right.
any time of year.
Yeah, I don't think there's really that much of a desire in the league level to change it. It's really,
even they like their time out in Tahoe.
Yeah, they would like to spread out. They would like to have the NFL on the front page as often as possible and as consistently throughout the year as possible. So I don't see it going back.
Oh no, I don't think it's going back either. I'm just right. saying, even like they've spaced everything out now to where
right.
they're trying to do, the combine and the draft and free agency at all at their different points, and
mm-hmm.
everything has its own month.
Mm-hmm.
What I'm saying, this dead period, is there anything that they'll try to do to actually break up the dead period?
No, at some point.
There's going to be some pushback, right?
Well, at some point, there's just not that much to. You're not going to have training camp. I mean, you're not going to have OTAs right now.
Right.
You're not going to have mini camps right now. You're not going to have on-field stuff. And really, I think what'll stop having anything from happening during July or during the last week of June and early July is I think the Players Association would prevent anything on field during that time. And if you're not on field, I don't know what else you're going to do during this time. They've already got the symposium, which they did last week. They might do something like that. But at some point, you got to have 3 or 4 weeks.
And honestly, again, is the NFL, have people really forgotten about the National Football League? Is it going to hurt them one iota? It doesn't hurt
right.
them one iota.
I mean, it's only a month. So
right. You can win. I mean, winning the headlines, I guess there's some tangible benefit to it.
Boy, they win it every other month.
Often. By the way, this date in football history brought to you by the Best Fence Company of Jacksonville, whose mission to fabricate and install the highest quality product at a competitive price while providing unsurpassed customer service. Fencing is an investment in your home or your business, your family, and you are going to feel protected. You're going to breathe easier knowing that Best Fence installed your new fence. Best Fence also provides professional free estimates at your convenience, so call them at 268-1638 or visit bestfencejacks.net for more information. The rookie symposium did take place. One thing Blake Bortles was said about it, or said at it, not quoting him directly, but words to the effect that he had met with the Jags.
Mm-hmm.
It was a good meeting, but nothing so much that indicated that he was their guy, that he was surprised along with everybody else, that he really thought that Cleveland, where the rookie symposium was taking place, was a much more likely destination
mm-hmm.
for. In fact, he thought if he was sitting there at number four, great chance that the Browns would have taken him. We don't know the answer
sure.
to that.
And they, never will, probably.
And never will, right? Who knows? Some 20 years from now, somebody will write a book. Maybe it'll be you.
Yeah.
And but they immediately trade back. Doesn't
mm-hmm.
mean they wouldn't have anyway, given the offer that they were given from the Buffalo Bills. But it is curious, and I mean, I think that just we see Dave Caldwell walking by a minute ago. That's why he wasn't going to trade back. He wasn't going to play games, because you can't sit there. Just as Blake Bortles doesn't know the Jags are going to take him, most of the people in Jacksonville don't know that the Jags are going to take Blake Bortles. How can you possibly know what the Cleveland Browns are going to do?
It's very easy, and it's done all the time, of second-guessing draft day decisions. Oh, you could have gotten this guy here. You could have gotten this guy here. Remember, all of those assumptions are based on the pre-draft mock drafts, are based on consensus going into that draft. Well, consensus outside the league makes not a whit of difference if this one team that you don't know about has decided they want Blake Bortles at number 8.
Right.
So you can say all you want. You can scan the internet. You can do your polls. You can put everything into this formula you've got and assume that nobody's going to draft him. But if one team decides to draft this kid and all of a sudden he's the quarterback you want, then you're left without your guy. You've got to take your guy if you think he's your guy, especially at that spot. there was too much of a threat of perhaps Cleveland or perhaps another team trading up. You know, they wanted this guy. They took him. And that's how it turned out.
Ultimately, though, that guy has got to be what you expected him to be, or else you made a mistake. Right? Whether it's Blake Bortles or, for instance, Gene Smith with Tyson Alualu, right? I mean, there were a lot of thought at the time. Boy, they could have gotten him considerably later. Sure. They could have traded way back. There was some talk at the time that maybe Miami was interested in him. They had a pick, either the next pick or shortly thereafter. You never know. If Tyson Alualu had turned into Gerald McCoy, then you're not questioning that pick whatsoever. Sure. So,
if they had traded back five spots to get Blake, they still need him to work out no matter where you took him. I mean, it's when you take a quarterback in the first round, especially a quarterback, it doesn't matter if you trade back 15 spots or not. You still need the guy to work out. There's pressure on this situation no matter what.
Does it matter where you take him in the first round, or does it matter, too, whether you're taking him as your first pick or your second pick? Like, if you use a pick and then you trade back into the end of the first round, doesn't that take a considerable amount of the pressure off of that guy?
Back...
Let's say they had taken Khalil Mack whatever, and then they had traded up from where they were, and whether it was Blake Bortles or Teddy Bridgewater, who ultimately went to Minnesota with the last pick of the first round, let's say they had made that move. They had traded up and taken Teddy Bridgewater. Is the pressure any less because he's not the first guy that you hung your hat on in the draft?
There's probably less scrutiny. I don't know if there's any less or more real pressure, because the less or more real pressure is going to come from within, and it's going to come from the situation.
By the way, I talked to somebody up in Minnesota over the weekend. They think Matt Cassel's going to win the job up there, and which shouldn't come as a shock, but nobody's going to really... I mean, in due time, Teddy Bridgewater will get his shot with the Minnesota Vikings, and the fact that if he doesn't win it right out of training camp, it's not that big a deal, because you are going with the 32nd pick in the draft. Right. It is a little bit different. You know, this is a little bit more unique to take a guy in the top five like the Jags have done, and basically come right out and say, chances are he's not going to play.
It is something where if it works, if Bortles in 2015 comes in and is very solid and is clearly on his way to being a productive quarterback in this league, then for the next five drafts, you'll see some team do this three times. I mean, you'll see this done two or three times, because all of a sudden this will be the way to go. And everybody around the Jaguars will tell you, they're not concerned whether this is a trend, whether it's something somebody else is doing. They feel like this is the right move for where this franchise is, where this quarterback is. But it'll certainly be something where if it doesn't work, you won't see a team do it for the next 10 years. If it does work, you'll see them do it for three or four. It's such a copycat league that they'll copycat this.
Now, but like you said, this is out of dealing with this one particular guy. If the Jags, in some way, if Andrew Luck was the guy and they were picking first and they took him, I don't think they would have taken the same route. You know, every case is individual.
It's not
an organizational philosophy.
Andrew Luck was much more ready. No, I mean, they looked at this draft, and Dave Caldwell was very upfront the whole time, didn't think there was going to be a guy ready to come in and play right away. He'll go a step further and tell you most years there's not a guy ready to come in and play right away. RG3, Andrew Luck sort of changed that perception for a little while, but he's of the opinion that most guys, even first-rounders who do play right away, really aren't ready, and it would be better for them not to. So they have an opportunity here to do that.
641-1010, if you'd like to get on board. Mike Dempsey, John Osier, Fat Tony here with you on Jaguars Today. If you'd like to weigh in on the question of the day by the Tom Bush Family of Dealerships, asking you simply, which rule change would you like to see enacted by the National Football League, or what rule change would you like to see enacted by the NFL to increase your viewing pleasure, or maybe your team's personal chances, whatever the case may be. Tweet us, post on Facebook, give us a call at 641-1010. Back with more Jaguars Today on a Wild West Guns and Gold Monday next on 1010XL 92.5 FM. Do you say you're now starting a music theme, starting with Touch of Grey right now?
Starting a music thing.
You think my kid is 10, now all of a sudden he's got gray hair? Is that the issue, or are you talking about his father?
That was neither. It's inspired by the Dead Zone conversation.
Oh, my goodness. It was an in-show music theme switch, Tony, that we went to there. went quickly away from the birthday theme and went right to the Dead Zone theme, old Grateful Dead. Their highest chart topper.
I want to say
Touch of Grey.
Touch of Grey. Right.
I want to say it reached number 2 on the Billboard pop charts. By the way, I'm such a sucker for those replays of Casey Kasem's Top 40 Countdown. I will listen to a Top 40 Countdown from 1973 like nobody's business.
That's awesome.
I love it, man.
I grew up on it. It was
it's
awesome.
I did too. Yeah. I grew up on the whole thing. Have you heard the Casey
the long outtakes? Distance dedication?
Oh, they were fantastic.
Love it.
Dear Casey, the listener writes. Have you heard the one where he gets all pissy? He's recording, he's recording the show, and he's got some like really upbeat song playing, and he comes out, and the story's about, "Dear Casey, my dog died today." One of these things, he's like, "Son of a beep! How do I always get beep and a beep? And you know, how do I always get the upbeat song followed by this somber nonsense?" Basically, Casey was a human being like the rest
That's
of us.
Right.
Too. He had feelings as well. All right, Johnny, let's take a look at a couple more things here on the roster before we wrap things up for today. By the way, continue to send us your submissions for potential NFL rule changes. We'll take a look at some of those coming up in about 15 minutes. At MD_1010XL, at John Osier, at 1010XL Fat Tony, at 1010XL Lauren. We looked at the wide receiver position a little bit. How many quarterbacks do you think they'll keep? You were gone last week. O'Howard and I talked about this. He thinks that definitively Blake Bortles, the number two guy going into camp or going into the season. If that's the case, what is the role of Ricky Stanzi on the roster if he is, in fact, on the roster?
I think that is maybe the great unknown question going into camp. I know Ryan's point. We've talked about it that – you know, you just can't have Bortles not be the three. I mean, not be the two. And that at some point, if Henny gets hurt, then the game plan changes once the, once things go live, so to speak. You got to put Bortles in. I think some of that will depend on how things play out in the preseason. If they go in the preseason and Stanzi is playing well when he's playing, and it's apparent that Bortles just needs more time, then I could see Stanzi going in as the backup and Blake spending some time as the third-team emergency quarterback. So, you know, I would guess right now that you go in with three with Stanzi as the third just because it's hard not to put Bortles as the backup. But I think that's still going to play out as training camp goes on.
All right, let me ask an ignorant question. In the emergency quarterback designation, have they done away with that, like on game day?
I said 13 emergencies. Third guy.
Okay, if you're going to be active on game day, you're either in or you're out now, as far as the quarterback position goes. Am I wrong about that?
I believe so. It's been as long since I covered that situation that I.
The reason being, because it never happens.
Right.
It rarely happens. I think it happened with the Bears with Josh McCown a couple of years ago, before he had his good year last year, like two seasons ago, where they had to in game. Go to him out of default because of injuries, but it rarely happens.
I've never seen it happen, so I will look that up in the break.
Do that.
Yes.
And get back to us at some point in the future, or perhaps in a future Ozone column, whatever the case may be. I could submit a question on the website.
One way or the other.
If that would help you
out. We'll get it solved.
Defensive line, obviously Jason Babin got let go. And is that a sign to you that just that's a good indication that what they're seeing out of guys like Andre Branch they feel is real, and that they just maybe a wealth of talent might be too strong a word for it, but they like the depth that they're building on the front four?
Well, it became apparent that through OTAs and through minicamps, the part that we can report on,
yes,
that they were going to have a problem getting Jason Babin on the field. So at that point, you could project it that it was going to be a problem during training camp, so why not go ahead and let him go now? And it was an insurance policy when they signed him in March. So once Branch kept doing the right things, once they saw some things out of Ryan Davis, once they considered that the depth was going to be there, no matter what combination they were going to use, it just made sense to go ahead and let Jason Babin go.
That plays
but
well.
Yes, it certainly speaks to what they believe they had at Leo.
Right. I mean, they've got numbers. Mm-hmm. Not all of it proven. Certainly most of it unproven
right.
at this point in time, but they feel pretty good about it. And I do think it's a small thing, but I think much like, you know, if you come here as a free agent, you take a look at the facilities, you're like, wow, that's the way they have a locker room mm-hmm. here. You know, that's attention to detail. I'm going to be treated first class while I'm here. Releasing a veteran at this time of year rather than sitting on him into training camp in case you have an injury, which you're certainly allowed to do. And there's, mm-hmm. you know, that's just the way it goes. Look, Jason Babin got like a $500,000 signing bonus when he got his deal. It turns out now it's basically free money for him. So you're well within your rights to camp on a guy. But I think that does factor in slightly. If you're a veteran, you look and say, hey, you know what? That team's going to do me
right
when it comes time to part ways with me.
And they were very upfront and you sort of overzealous in saying it, and it's not the word I'm looking for, but they were very upfront about Jason Babin did the right things. No matter what you'd heard about Jason Babin before he was here, they liked his approach. He got along well with Gus. Gus liked him. There was no bad blood between the two, so that was the right thing to do in that sense. And it certainly speaks well. If you're a free agent, like you said, there are teams who would not have done it that way. There are teams who would have kept the guy through training camp and not given him a chance to catch on somewhere else. So, again, it's just sort of in keeping with the way this franchise has been doing business since Gus Bradley and Dave Caldwell got here.
Do you, the way you phrase it, not give him a chance, do you think there are teams that specifically do that? In other words, to say, if this guy's going to come back, put it this way, if I cut him now and he goes on somewhere else and he has 10 sacks this year, it's going to come back and look bad on me. Is that why they do it so much, that they don't want to help somebody else out there? They don't want to look stupid for cutting a guy, that they would sit on a guy that long?
It's more just sort of not knowing what you got. You know, and you keep a guy like Jason Babin because you're not sure, okay, how's Chris Clemons going to turn out? Maybe you're not quite confident in
Branch.
How Andre Branch is going to develop. You know you've got Ryan Davis. Maybe you're not, if you're unsure, but obviously they feel good about the guys who are in that spot behind Chris Clemons. So it's very definitely on some level a confidence thing. It's also the fact that Jason Babin's 34 years old, and it's time to figure out what you've got going forward.
All right, give you an ozone multiple choice here, okay? First, Dave Caldwell.
None of the above.
Maybe. That's one of them. It's always one of them, right?
It's always one I go with.
First Dave Caldwell draft pick to be released by the Jaguars. Is it Josh Evans? Is it Jeremy Harris? Is it Ace Sanders? Nod towards Will Howard. Or is it none of the above? Those first two are the guys, I think, that are
I'd say Harris
most
is,
in jeopardy.
Is the most out of that, the most likely. Simply because he didn't play last year and you don't know what there is. But I don't know that we have a firm. It's hard to write the book on Jeremy Harris until training camp.
Right.
So I would guess Jeremy Harris if I had to choose one, but I wouldn't say it's a guarantee that any of those guys get released. And I think certainly for Evans and Harris, training camp is big.
What do you expect out of Josh Evans? If let's say he comes back healthy, what level of play? You know, year two, more comfortable with his assignment, stuff like that. Do you expect that to be noticeably improved, his level of play in training
camp?
Do
I expect it to be?
It needs to be, right?
It needs to be. I don't know if we saw indication last year that it automatically will be, but it certainly needs to be.
And so that's just more of a wait-and-see kind of situation for you.
Yeah, it's so hard to say with rookies because it's so there can be such a jump. But, you know, I don't think Josh showed last year the sort of automatic development that you assume you're going to see from Cyprian and Gratz. You know, I assume from watching those guys, and even Ace Sanders to a point, that what you saw, there was enough production there last year in fits and starts, which is what you see out of a rookie, to think, okay, there's going to be a lot more consistency this year. I don't think we saw that level from Josh, and it will be incumbent on him in training camp to show them that it's there.
All right, one more, and then we'll take a look today at some of the responses to our question of the day. Linder versus McClendon at the right guard spot. Seems like a pretty straightforward battle. Those two guys are fighting for one spot right now. The difference being with a position like that, you know, you may win the starting defensive end spot. The other guy's going to play.
Right.
You win the starting right guard spot. If you do your job, the other guy shouldn't be playing
very much.
Exactly
right. It's one of the few all or nothing. There's really no, I guess, linebacker, secondary on defense, sort of like that. But if you lose the cornerback position, there's a good chance to play nickel. You know, so it's either Linder or McClain. I'd be surprised if it's not Linder. I mean, all the tea leaves point to that. You drafted him. You released Will Rackley later on. You traded up to get him. All indications are they started working with him at the end of OTAs and minicamps with him in the lineup. It looks like that's the progression, and that they're sort of assuming that it'll be Linder, or I shouldn't say assuming. It's his, again.
He'll get the benefit of the doubt.
Even his job loses too much, but that would be the course of action that you would think is going
to
happen.
But I think
I'd be surprised if it's not Linder.
They've got to believe that McClendon's playing pretty well, unless it's just purely to motivate Linder to keep fighting for the spot, because they've said, you know, that he's right there in the mix, and you would think at least a primary backup on the interior of the offensive line, or not.
It's going to be Linder. I would.
No, in terms of starting. Right. But, I mean, in terms of McClendon's place with the team.
They like him.
Pretty
sure.
Secure.
Yeah. And again, it's so hard to tell if OTAs. We're talking about the offensive line OTAs. How did Linder earn more time in OTAs when there's really not contact? I don't know that really happened. It's more this guy's learning the offense. We get where he is. He's starting to be more comfortable in it, and it's going to be a one-on-one equal time competition in training camp. But, yes, I would say McClendon has a very real chance to stick on the roster no matter what happens at that spot.
All right, Wild West Guns of Gold Monday continues in a moment. The fan feedback spotlight today asking you what rule change would you like to see the NFL enact to make it a better game for you. The fans out there, we'll take a look at some of your responses to that coming up as far as the social media goes. We've got a rule change idea as well from our buddy Terrence, so let's get him on before we break real quickly. 641-1010. What's up, Terrence? How are you?
Gentlemen, how are you today?
We're great.
Listen, I know this may not fly well with the league, especially with such a premium on offensive scoring, but, you know, I thought for as an idea for quite some time that, say, when a team is on offense, and with their backs against their own goal line, maybe on the 5-yard line, and there's a simple penalty, a false start. You know, they come with the rule, they generally go with the rule half the distance to the goal.
Right.
Why is there never been a rule that instead of moving the ball half the distance to the goal, that they consider moving the chain markers 5 yards or 10 yards, whatever the penalty necessitate?
Oh, so you're saying instead of, like, not really penalizing them at all, if you're at the 1-yard line, you're penalized a half yard. You move, if it's a 5-yard penalty, you move the sticks 5 yards further down the field. You're
exactly.
Saying. Yeah, I don't think that's unreasonable, because you do reach a point, obviously, where penalties don't hurt you all that much. There's also been, you know, talk that, look, if you're inside the 5 and you get a 5-yard penalty, why wouldn't you give a safety to the offensive team, you know? Or
they do. If the penalty occurs in the end zone, obviously they do.
Right, if holding occurs in the end zone. But if you're, let's say it's a simply false start and you're lined up at the 4-yard line, it's a 5-yard penalty, that would put you in the end zone. I don't think that is as outrageous as some of the other things you
hear. You don't see it that often, so it's probably never become a real hot-button issue within the league. I kind of like that idea. Hey,
not bad.
First and 40, go for it.
Yeah, why not? You were going to make a point right before Terrence.
Well, I just think last half of the show, need to get Tony involved a little more. He's been quiet today.
He has
maybe
been quiet.
Maybe a slow start to the week.
I think he's saving his energy up.
I'm a little under the weather, yeah.
But he's got his show
for Team
tonight,
USA.
Right? He's got his show
the
tonight,
The Fat
right?
Tony show is tonight.
That's what it is.
We're
going
to get a full preview
up.
Coming up.
All right.
He has been holding back with hot World Cup takes by the dozens that he's
got.
Oh,
I got
for
World
you.
Cup takes.
I think there's enough Tony to go around on this show and his show.
Up right there. Oh, I think so, too. I absolutely agree, and we'll give them that chance to shine. Coming up next, we'll take a look at the fan feedback spotlight, and we'll weigh in with a couple of our own ideas on how we can improve the National Football League. Mike Dempsey, John Osier, Fat Tony, here with you live from Everbank. It's Jaguars today on a Wild West Guns and Gold Monday on 1010XL 92.5 FM. All right, Wild West Guns and Gold Monday, what do you got?
Is that Lego song?
That's not the Lego song. That's a good guess. That's a good guess. I have a feeling I'll be hearing that a little bit today. Here's the thing. My son, he turns 10 today. He's 10 years old. And one of the presents that he got was the Lego Movie video game for the PlayStation. And
they don't brand at all there at Lego.
No, not at all. I mean, everything, right? I mean, Tony, pajamas, video game, you anything, right? They've got everything that you can merchandise. But and a lot of people do, like, the Christmas Eve present. You know, you can open one present on Christmas Eve.
Mm-hmm.
I was like, you know what? I'm going to be at work in the morning. I know he wants to play this game. You want to open one present on the day before your birthday, that's fine. And so he did that last night. So he pops it in for like 30 minutes before he has to go to bed. And we've been at Legoland all day. And he's like zipping through every level. And I'm like, what? How? This is the first time you've played it. He goes, yeah, but I've watched videos of all the levels. And he's like, he's like on the iPad every day. Studying the game and everything. I was like,
he's got a future.
Yeah, maybe. I don't know. He's a good mimic. He can let other people do the groundwork.
That's, and
I was like,
cool.
Like Pac-Man. I didn't usually come up with my own patterns, John. I just copied some time-tested patterns. Although I was deadly on Super Pac-Man. Had my own pattern. I'd crush it. I'd still be playing on one quarter right now if I didn't get bored from Super Pac-Man back from like ninth grade. Just letting you know. Throwing down the gauntlet for anybody who dares challenge me in that game, if you can find a console out there. That was Rock and Roll is Dead by Lenny Kravitz, Dead Zone.
There I like that.
Lauren, right. Doubling up on the Dead Zone today. All right, today we wanted to know in the Tom Bush Family Dealerships Fan Feedback Spotlight, what rule change would you like to see the NFL enact? Tony, what do we get?
We got a lot of people with World Cup fever is what we got.
Do we? How do you know?
Because of the suggestions that we got with the rules.
All right. do tell.
From Viper Driver, we got, in the spirit of the World Cup, I'd love to see no commercials. Hashtag Jaguars today.
Never happen.
From Stevie, Irish Jaguar, keep playing until the Jags take the lead. Once that happens, the game is over. Hashtag Jaguars today.
Unlikely to happen.
That would be an interesting rule change.
You have to read his hashtag the way he says Jaguars. Jaguars.
Jaguars.
From Jason, we got declaring tackle eligible makes no sense. Guy Whipper could have been a real weapon. Hashtag element of surprise. Hashtag Jaguars today. From Jason, eliminate the dog and pony show of having the ref trot over to the monitor for replays, review everything from the booth. Hashtag Jaguars today. From Brian, we get, I like to see personal fouls punished like hard fouls in soccer. Yellow/red cards. Hashtag Jaguars today.
I was reading in Peter King's column today in Monday Morning Quarterback about one of those circumstances. Somebody got some kind of unnecessary roughness penalty in a Canadian game that he went to, and it was a 25-yard penalty. Wow. I don't know if that's like the standard fare. Now, of course, they have a 110-yard field, and it's crazy wide. Actually, if anything, with as many – I love wide open football. And look, the running game is great and all that, but I am a fan of throwing the football around, and I enjoy that. Widening the field, to me, would be fine. Just more space. I think basketball is more of an issue with that than the NFL, but I love the Canadian field. I love the Canadian game in the aspect. They have a 20-second play clock.
Right.
You know that?
20 seconds. I like that. Do you need the field wider in the NFL, though? I mean, right now, scoring doesn't seem to be a huge problem.
Probably not, but I just like, to me, I like scoring.
If it ever became a problem again, I could see them widen the field.
I like guys making plays. I like, you know, the athletic acrobatics of the National Football League. So
one thing I
think
don't
you get
think
more
you'll
of that.
See happen is the question that prompted all this, which is seeing interference on either side reviewable. It's just so counter to what replay is supposed to be all about, which is this league does not like bringing judgment calls into the equation. They want judgment calls out of the mix as much as possible. I don't think you'll see them put a judgment call into the replay system, meaning interference is very much a judgment call. It's why it's not involved in it right now. And judgment calls where...
What's not a judgment call, though?
Offsides is pretty, you know, things like that are pretty clear cut.
Okay, did he move before?
Right.
Right.
But most penalties aren't in the replay.
That's true.
It's line calls. It's things that can be determined.
Right, inbounds, out of bounds.
The reason replay is in is they don't want things being able to be reshown all week and have missed an obvious
error.
That
were clearly wrong.
Right. So if it's judgment, they are very much, you know, the reason they took the rule out about being pushed out of bounds, you know, where a receiver had to come down with the ball inbounds.
And it used to be you could push him out, and if it was ruled that he would have landed inbounds,
right, then it was
you
a catch.
Could rule it a catch.
They took that out because they want to take the element of judgment as much away from the officials as at all possible to make the game officiated the same across the board. So that's why I would be surprised if they put a rule in where you could challenge a judgment call like pass interference.
Yet, with the Tuck rule, they went the opposite direction, and they made it more about judgment. Mm-hmm. Now, like if the referee deems that the quarterback had given up, I forget the terminology, given up the actual attempt to pass before the Tuck rule was instituted to completely take judgment away from that play. If that ball started forward and was moving forward and it came out, it didn't matter if the ball was headed back towards your leg as you were, you know, going through a complete pump fake. And I thought, you know, going back to the most infamous call of it, the Tom Brady call, I thought it was, you know, enacted properly on that play.
Within the frame of what the rules were. Anytime you're officiating a game as complex and fast as the NFL, you're going to have inconsistencies in philosophy, like you just pointed out. But I think overall, their general MO is to take as much judgment and as much things that could cause games to be officiated differently in Seattle than it is in Miami. They want that out as much as possible, and they want things that are easy to keep consistent across the board as much as possible.
A couple of other here quick ones on Facebook. Joel Swan said, I'd love to get rid of the no end zone celebrations rule. Sometimes you just need to celebrate a TD. Hashtag Jaguars today.
I agree with that completely.
But the reason, in part, a major reason they put that in was the Fun Bunch with the Redskins.
Sure.
Right? They used to do that whole circle.
I remember it well.
Do the high five. And then wasn't it a few Cowboy players that tried to break it up in the end zone and kind of caused a near fight?
83, the Skins did not clinch the division, but came close. Epic game. And yeah, they were getting to do the Fun Bunch with the high fives. And
basically a circle of guys doing a group high five.
But, you know, how great were T.O.'s celebrations and chat? I mean, that's fun. I get that the league doesn't like it, but that's fun.
I thought a lot of it, like the Sharpie sign of the ball, the cell phone, all that's funny. You go out to the middle of the field and you spike the ball on the logo.
Yeah.
Even though you're not doing that to another person, it's the symbol of the organization, and you know, that's going to cause a problem. And I think that's what they're afraid or were afraid of.
Yeah.
Having that big, ugly, you know, melee kind of scene on the field.
Sure, but
you're okay with an occasional
melee.
You're
always against it. Look, I'm against melees. I get that. But you can legislate melees away without legislating fun away.
This one from George Weirich, in honor of the World Cup. I don't think this is a pro soccer take. After the fourth quarter, if the game is tied, the two kickers have a kickoff starting from the 30 and going back 5 yards until someone misses. Same idea as penalty kicks. Hashtag Jaguars today.
It is World Cup season, Tony.
Hashtag Go USA as well. But it is the same idea as penalty kicks, sort of. Don't think we're ever going to see that happen.
But it's sort of as foreign to the game as deciding soccer the way they do it.
Yeah, it would be like having a free throw competition.
Yeah,
it's just exactly.
Yeah,
I've heard this suggestion this weekend. If you're going to do penalty kicks in soccer, go do the penalty kicks at the end of 90 minutes of play. Have the result. The result only comes into play.
So one team has to play like their hair's on fire.
Basically, you know you've got to play. You know, for the win or the. You know, are you playing for the tie? You're playing for the win, because too often you go, I think, into that situation trying not to make the big mistake. Let's see, at least get us to the penalty kicks type situation. Who the hell wants to do that, by the way? Tony, today, the Fat Tony Show.
Yeah.
I'm sure you're going to talk about World Cup fever. What do we have? France, Nigeria starting in like 10 minutes?
Yeah, and then Germany, Algeria is this afternoon at 4 o'clock as well in the round of 16. Obviously, USA, Belgium tomorrow. We'll be talking about and previewing that game. I got Sean Devaney coming on to talk about the NBA and what's going on with free agency. Obviously, Jason Kidd now moving from the Nets to the Bucks.
Traded for 2 second-round picks.
Right, and everything with the big three down in Miami, what's that going to look like going in the future? Carmelo Anthony. I mean, a lot of big pieces in free agency available right now in the NBA. And, look, we're going to get into some baseball tonight as well, as there's been some pretty interesting stuff in the pitching world here in the last week. I mean, Clayton Kershaw is unhittable right now. Tim Lincecum gets his second no-hitter of his career earlier this week as well. So we'll get into that and maybe a little bit of why I may be as exhausted as I am from a physical standpoint. This weekend it really caught up with me, but last week was a blast, and we'll take a look back tonight.
Well, when you go hard. I've always heard that about
yeah,
you.
Yeah, I went a little too hard last week.
Do you have your viewing plans all laid out for tomorrow?
Oh, yeah. I got the plans. I got the same outfit. It hadn't let me down yet.
Will you be wearing the outfit tomorrow, even though it's considerably earlier than kickoff time?
I'll have the shirt. I'm not going to be wearing the Uncle Sam hat tomorrow in the studio.
It was,
no. I was out of town.
An award winner.
How did Tony respond to the Portugal goal? What was the... I'm trying to bring...
We want to go back to a week ago.
It was a quiet Monday.
It was a quiet Monday.
From his part. O'Halloran was saying Tony just sat there kind of in a funk a little bit.
Yep.
But, all right, we got to wrap it up. We got XL Primetime coming up next for the senior writer. Check out the 1,057th-ish consecutive edition of the Ozone at Jaguars.com. Catch Jaguars.com live and all his other fine products coming up this week. Johnny O, good to see you.
Thanks, Mike.
Appreciate it, man. For Fat Tony, for Lauren Brooks, for Joe Fortunato, I'm Mike Dempsey. We'll say hi to the boys of XL Primetime next. Thanks to Wild West Guns and Gold. They bring you Jaguars today every Monday on 1010XL, 92.5 FM.